side of our budget. We're not sure of that number. And we're seeing it should be around that. It could be slightly lower or slightly higher. And we're not sure of the timing of it, if it's actually going to come in July or if it might come before that. When it was first announced, I think there was the state had 60 days, or the feds had 60 days and the state had 30 days. So it was a 90-day clock, I think, that had started. So that's why there's kind of a yellow. It's a little bit of an unknown, and that should become more clear as the spring goes on. Below that are national forest receipts, which I mentioned earlier. These funds can only be used for schools or roads. And since the city of Gustavus does not run the school, we use our funds for roads. These funds are can be quite variable and aren't announced until late in the budget process. We've just been leaving them out of our operating budget for planning purposes. And I'll explain why later. I'll show it down the bottom here, but because we are fully funding roads out of savings at the moment. So any national forest receipts that do end up coming in just means that we pull less out of savings. It doesn't affect the bottom line of the budget. It just means we're pulling less from savings. Below that is payment in lieu of taxes. This has been pretty steady over the years, so we feel pretty confident about our number of $113,000 there. Then a little bit of income from fundraising at the library, fire department income here with ambulance billing and the ambulance subscription program and fees that might be collected from training events. Interest income from our checking account. Then under lands income, we have gravel pit gravel sales. There was an increase in the price per cubic yard the city charged last year, and that enabled us to put that $6,000 into the new gravel pit fund investment savings account. And we have that included in this year's budget also. Then there's lease income. This is for the ACS and GCI and AT&T leases that the city has down near the school gym. Then library income and marine facilities income. We bumped marine facilities income back up higher than last year with the assumption that most of the charter fleet would be returning this summer from what we are hearing. Then under state revenue, we have the community assistance program, which used to be known as the community revenue sharing program. And this number that we've been given here, the 77,000, that's an estimate from the state. So that we feel good about that number also. And then we get into our tax income. The retail tax income is the first line here. You can see for our fiscal year to date, as of last week, we were at 195. I'm expecting that we're gonna at least hit 235 with our next, once we take in our next quarter of returns, tax returns. And so we're quite a bit higher than what we had conservatively projected last year. The council has estimated a conservative number here of 325,000, down from the 392 and 375 in our last two kind of bumper years, but still higher than the 235 that we're expected to take in this year. We're hearing really positive things about from GVA and local businesses about their summer bookings, and feel like this is a conservative but not overly ambitious number. The remote sellers retail tax is a program that Alaska Municipal League, might be misspeaking there, but it's a program that got set up within the state here that many municipalities have joined to collect sales tax from internet, from retail sales made over the internet. And so we've signed on with that also. And so that's where that line item is now. Room tax income, we're going to be right around 20 grand for this fiscal year. We had a high of 75 to 78 in previous fiscal years. We've conservatively put $40,000 in here for this coming fiscal year. I know there's been a lot of talk about various bookings occurring this summer with the construction projects that are occurring, and the city is not gain room tax on any rentals that are longer than 30 days. But so I'm hearing some negative talk that that's going to be impacting our room sales because rooms will be booked. But I think that we can still feel very optimistic about it because those construction workers aren't going to be taking up rooms at charter fishing lodges. They're not going to be taking up rooms at the Glacier Bay Lodge, things like that. So I don't think it's, from what I'm hearing, it's not going to be impacting our overall ability to book rooms for visitors. But again, this is projected at just over half of 2 years ago. The fish box tax is also kind of a conservative middle ground, assuming the charter fleet will be operational, but maybe not back up to their full capacity. So that's where we're at with the estimates for the tax income. That'll switch us over now to the expense side of things. I'll just go through these kind of quickly too. We have administrative costs for fees for different things. Advertising is pretty minimal. Bank service charges have changed this year, the way the bank is applying service charges. So that number has gone up in the budget. Our building insurance and our general liability and workers' comp, all those estimates for our premiums for next fiscal year, we won't get until May. And so those, we just have in last year's numbers in here, our actuals from last year. And then we can make an adjustment at the May meeting if we need to, if they're drastically different. And then building maintenance and repair for all the different departments under contractuals. We have the ambulance billing expense for the company we contract with to do all our insurance billing. Managed IT services. This is for all the IT needs for all the city departments. And then this other category, and that's a big one, so I just wanted to talk about a little bit what's in there. It includes the website hosting for the city website, and the meeting software we use, and any codification of ordinances that are passed. It also includes archiving of our social media, which is required. The disposal and recycling center includes our recycling of their electronic waste and getting wood chips and overburden for the facility. For the library, it includes custodial services, and for marine facilities, it includes moving the wooden and the big steel mooring floats. And also includes some little odd small building projects would come out of this category as well. Under dues, fees is the next one. That includes a lot of memberships for the different departments and things like the annual fees for the scale and for the software that the DRC is using for processing payments, and the online catalog book for the library, and any book subscriptions and magazine subscriptions. That all goes under dues, fees. Under economic development services, we have the Gustavus Visitors Association. They asked for just over $40,000 in this version of the budget. The council has funded $30,000 of that. Minor election day expense and equipment fuel. This is for the equipment of the DRC, the Bobcats, things like that. Equipment purchase. This includes some IT purchases and then just other small purchases around the departments. Equipment insurance is the DRC equipment, and then maintenance for mainly the DRC equipment. We have events and celebrations. This includes the holiday gift for employees, freight shipping, the bulk of which of this is shipping out recyclables from the DRC, fundraising expenses for the library, our general liability, which we'll be getting a finalized number again, like I said, in May. Here's that line item for the gravel pit fund that was added last year and that we just deposited this month. And we have that same amount included for next year. Library materials. This has a little bit of a bump up. We've been trying to do a nonfiction department each, nonfiction section each year, and the funds that were being allocated before weren't quite covering it. And also includes Battle of the Books for the book supplies for the school. Marine facilities insurance is insurance in the steel mooring float and maintenance and repairs. Occupational health is vaccine options for tetanus or hepatitis for DRC employees or the fire hall if they needed it too. Payroll we'll go over in this next spreadsheet that has it detailed out by position. So I'm not going to cover that right here. Professional services is the city attorney and the attorney that's working on the rate case, the electricity rate case. Public relations are for local, supporting local things here in town. The repair and replacement fund is what I mentioned earlier, was one of our investment savings accounts. And this fund is the, we're setting aside a certain amount each year, depending on what assets each department has and following the state's schedule. And so this is actually a little lower this year because we have some of the assets have met their scheduled amount to be saved and we don't need to save additional funds towards them. So that was a drop for this year. Road maintenance and the budget, we just do a lump sum. And then you can see here for the actuals that have happened, it splits out by different categories. I apologize, this is split over the page. We did it for $100,000 last year and we're bumping it up to, proposing to bump it up to $150,000 this year. Again, this fund all comes out of savings except for any National Forest receipts that I've received in the current year and can be applied to offset any savings. In the past, this council had funded the rookery, which is not operating at the moment. There's no request there, so that's at zero. And we have a stipend. This is for the volunteers, the fire department and EMS services with a per call stipend. And then we started this year. Supplies for all the various departments. It's that one adds up to a lot of different things. I don't think of anything specific to mention for that one. We'll have a little bit higher this year for marine facilities because we have to purchase our vessel stickers this year, which is expensive. And then we're also doing a little more at the library with additional grab and go kits that have been very popular. And also they're doing a book cataloging project, which was a one-time allotment of money too out of supplies. Telecommunications is phones and internet and Microsoft licensing. Training and travel is a little bit for required training for the library and a chunk of required training for the fire hall. And then also funds set aside for new council members to attend the council member training in Anchorage in the fall if that occurs. And so that's what the training and travel are part of that. And then utilities is straightforward. Vehicle fuel, this is for the fire department vehicles and insurance for them. And then mileage reimbursement goes to employees that use their personal vehicles for city work. And down here in the bottom, you can see I've split this into two lines now. We have the encumbered funds that we were using for road maintenance. We've now exhausted those with this final withdrawal here in our current fiscal year. And then we're bringing out from other savings for road maintenance. And so we've got at this point, $62,000 coming out for this fiscal year. That should be offset by National Forest Receipts funds we should be receiving anytime. And then we've just programmed it in for 150 for next fiscal year, straight out of savings, knowing that that could change if, with National Forest Receipts funds. So this version of the budget leaves us with a net income of $17,000. I wanted to point out that we have had surpluses the prior years before the pandemic. To balance the pandemic budget, we programmed in $217,000 of these rollover funds, which we kind of referred to as a rainy day funds. And if this fiscal year wasn't a rainy day, I don't know what it was. At this point, we haven't needed to transfer any of those funds in. If we, I just looked at the numbers again, we should be at least below 100,000, if not even lower, if we have to use anything from savings, but we won't know that till probably right near the end of the fiscal year, exactly what, how it's all gonna shake out. So that is version one with all the different line items. So it's to talk about also in version one is the payroll that I said we would come back to. So this, again, I hope it's not too small for everybody. This has all the payroll by department and by position. And this is kind of where the two budgets diverge. We had multiple departments asking for help, increased staffing in the coming fiscal year. And didn't really see a way to do all of it. And so the two budgets have two different versions of trying to tackle some of these department needs. This particular budget has added in an operator position as a new permanent position at the Disposal and Recycling Center, the DRC, and has also added in a half-time library assistant position for the first 6 months of the fiscal year, so from July through December, as a temporary position, so without benefits. The operator position is the current manager operator is seeing retirement in the next few years. And so we're trying to work on a transition plan to bring another employee up to speed and pass on some of the institutional knowledge. And so that's why the second position has been added in. The assistance time has been reduced with the operator taking, being able to cover some of those hours, and the manager position has also been reduced. So that's the game plan with that position. With the resignation of one of our library directors this month, we've been looking at doing a restructuring at the library, going with the one director position and then a second position of program coordinator. And then this library assistant position to assist with a cataloging logging project and also to help just run the front desk while the volunteer the group of volunteers has not been as readily available during this pandemic time. So those are the items you'll see that'll be different here in the next, in the other version two of the budget. The EMS coordinator is funded instead, the emergency medical services coordinator to work at the fire hall. This is in that packet that's on the website. I'm not gonna go through this, this particular table unless people have specific questions. All this does is it breaks down all the categories that we just saw by department, what each department is spending. And then what you see in this total column here on the far right is the same as the total column, those first three pages we went through. So I'm not gonna go through those here, but that's what that part is. So here's version two. I don't think there's anything different here on the income side of version two. Still the same assumptions and scenarios. On the expense side, we tweaked a few categories here and there a little bit. The main one, well, not the main one, but one of note is the Visitors Association funded amount drops to $25,000 in this version of the budget. And I think our training and travel went down a little bit in this version also. And then I'm just going to skip down to the bottom line here. So this one is basically zeroed out. We're right at 200 bucks for the budget. And then if you look at the payroll, you can see that the EMS coordinator position is funded here and the operator position is not funded. And so the manager and assistance hours are adjusted. We still have the library restructuring occurring, but the part-time library assistant is not funded in this version of the budget. And then again, it goes through by department here afterwards, but I don't think we need to cover that unless people have specific questions. So before I turn it back over to the mayor, I just wanted to say that I love talking about the budget and the numbers. And if anybody has questions or comments or anything like that, I'm always happy to discuss over email or come and meet with me or call on the phone or anything like that. And I would be happy to go over anything in specifics. And I have monthly financial reports that are always in the general meeting packet too, that you can track things as it goes through the year. So that's all I have right now.
Thanks, Phoebe. Okay, so at this time, I would like to open it up to council discussion and questions about Phoebe's presentation of the versions of the budget. And if any council members specifically have questions for the library, if we could maybe get some of those in a little bit sooner rather than later, just to help accommodate for Arlo. So I'll just open it up to council questions and discussion. Go ahead, Tanya.
Thank you, and thank you, Phoebe, so much for that great presentation of the budget. The more I hear it, the more it kind of starts to sink in, but it's still, you know, a relatively new format for me. So the one thing I'm curious about is the $150,000 for road maintenance. Well, first of all, I have two questions. Why does the road maintenance go from $100,000 previously to $150,000 for next year? And then is that the only case where we actually are funding something out of our savings, or are there other instances in this budget where that is happening to balance the budget?
Thanks, Tanya. That is the only place in this, and either of these versions of the budget, that anything is projected to come out of savings. And you can see here in the past, it was always encumbered funds. So those were funds that couldn't be spent on anything else anyways, besides road maintenance. And so that we were actively trying to use those up instead of using other savings or other sources. And so now we have just run out of those funds. We have used this line item of the prior year cash balance to balance last year's budget and maybe the one before, I can't remember offhand. We didn't actually have to transfer any funds at any point thus far. There's still the possibility we will, during this pandemic year, need to pull some funds in to break even for this fiscal year, but we won't know that until the end of the, as it gets closer to the end of the fiscal year. This original budget has been adjusted since then, and currently this line item's at 153. I just looked at it this afternoon. I think we'll be able to drop it down to at least 100, if not more, as I try to finalize those numbers. So that's the only other case where we might be using money from savings besides roads. And then if Councilmember Taylor would like to speak to why the budget's increased this year, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I could do that. Actually, I was going to say something about the library, but with regard to that question, we've never felt like we really had enough money to do both the regular maintenance and make the improvements to upgrade roads that we've needed to do. And we sort of scraped by and not done some of the work that we would have liked to have done. And that kind of came back to bite us in that December flood, where the lack of adequate ditches and other provisions to handle big rainstorms like that and overflow from the river. We just were not prepared well enough for that, because the roads were never originally constructed by the original subdividers to handle those drainage issues. We plunked a lot of extra money in repairs after that December flood, and we have filed for refunding on that using disaster funds. We hope to hear the answer soon. And actually, we have filed for a lot more than we have already spent, with the idea of doing more work that we feel that we can justify under the disaster funding. In addition to that, we're looking into hazard mitigation funding that's available, because Travis did our hazard mitigation plan, and we're now positioned to get FEMA funding and other funding for hazard mitigation. So we expect to be doing a lot more work to improve drainage ditches, especially on roads like Wilson, same old road, a little bit of Tong Road, and some other roads that that just haven't had decent drainage. So we don't know what we'll get for funding from those federal sources. Some of it we may just have to fund internally out of our own savings, but we need budget line to be working those projects, because often we get refunded after we do the project. So we hope to do a lot better job with the roads going forward with a little more funding. So that's kind of my take on that. And maybe Tom or Joe Clark could add to that too, since they work these issues also very closely. And then the question I had with regard to the library was that our library is actually the school's library also. Our school does not have its own library, and the school gets a huge benefit from having the city own the library and staff it and buy all the books and materials that students use. And so my question for the library people is how does that figure into the budget? I guess I'm being kind of vague here, but I know that if we were not to fund the library as well as we would like to with these two positions, does that affect things like the hours that the library is available for the school and so forth? We want to for sure make sure that the library continues to support our school as well as we can possibly do it. We don't have to fund the school as a city, because we're a second-class city and can't do that. But our big contribution to the school from the city really is the provision of the all-important library. So any comments that Michelle may have on that, I think would be helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I really appreciate that comment. So you are correct. We are not a school library. We do try to act as a school library, but we, of course, don't have the funding for that. So what I mean by act as a school library is Jen and whoever will be hired next spend quite a bit of time doing programs that are school related. And so I was just talking with Jen about this, and she says in the past, pre-pandemic, of course, there were between 3 and 5 school visits to the library a week. Most of these were done while the library was closed to the public for a few reasons, so that the kids can have use of the library, but also during this time, sometimes it's like a music is incorporated and so it's louder. So that's just another reason why we'd be closed there. So the restructure has thought about this a little bit and having one director and then a program coordinator. As I'm sure everybody knows, our library, we're like running out of room for all the books that we have, and our meeting room is quite small. So this is kind of an idea to expand our services outside of the library. But anyways, this programs coordinator would be doing all of the school and class visits, as well as programs for kids who aren't in the school system, and then adults as well. That position requires quite a bit of time that is either working to prepare for these things or actually doing the programs. And so that's time that person cannot spend sitting at the desk during open hours. So the assistant position would help in that so that we could be open to the public for more hours. Now, the services to the school I don't see them necessarily being cut. It's hard to tell. But I think that this programs coordinator, you know, their job is to provide programs. And so I think that would probably take precedence for that job position over sitting at the desk, which is what I would be covering during those times. And I think I answered your question, Mike, but if you have anything else or would like clarification, I'm happy to answer.
Yeah, that's very helpful. It does give me a little deeper understanding, and I hope those also listening in have an appreciation for the value that the library brings to our school, which we all feel our school is such an important piece of our community and so important to our young folks. And the library is one thing that the city can and does do to support the school, and it's a vital piece of the school's program. So thanks for the help.
Are there other council members that have discussion points or questions? Go ahead, Joe Clark. Go ahead, Joe.
I didn't have a question. I would like to make a comment, though. I've spoken to numerous people who just want the city council to put the brakes on any raises and also no increases in staffing. We already know that most of our citizens expect the council to bring our payroll expenditures closer to our tax income as agreed in CY19-16. Gustavus is very fortunate to have employees who are dedicated to their work, and there's no question that they deserve more than they are getting. But our first responsibility is to our citizenry, and we have many who are just barely getting by. I have spoken to a few of our local building contractors, and they informed me that last April, a sheet of half-inch plywood cost $14, and currently the same sheet of plywood is selling for $67. Our local gas at the dray has gone up about a dollar, and the state is also considering legislation to double state gas tax. We are currently taking $150,000 out of our $197,000 AMLIP account for roads, leaving less than a year's funding for our roads this coming season. We will be in a true fix if we do not develop a workable strategy for our road funding. So rather than taking our income money and putting it into expanding our payroll, maybe we should consider putting it into our roads budget, which would benefit everyone. There is no guarantee that the city will continue to receive federal funding, and the same with CARES funding. CARES funds are finite and will definitely come to an end. We owe it to our citizenry to proceed conservatively and cautiously. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Go ahead, Tanya.
Thank you. I just would like to acknowledge what Council Member Clark just said, that, you know, that lots of people are real concerned about the city and our payroll expenses. And I just would love to make sure that people are clear on what these added positions might bring to the community, so that when the community comments on these budgets, that we know what, you know, if we choose not to fund these new positions, what are we giving up? Or on the other hand, what do we get with the new positions that are being proposed? All three of them, the library, the DRC, and the fire hall EMS. So I wondered if each of the people who would be working with these positions want to just give like a really quick summary. I know Michelle just spoke to the library, but what does the community get from that added position that we should know about?
Mayor, this is Michelle. Would you like me to respond?
Yes, thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, Tanya. I really appreciate that question. So specifically for the library assistant, this will do a few things. It will enable myself and whoever else is hired to do other foundational, I guess, aspects of our job that aren't always noticed by the public, grant writing and such. But this person will primarily sit at the desk. So that just means being available during open hours. And I've ran a few draft schedules, and it'll allow us to open between 5 and 10 hours more a week. And this person will, if hired, go through our catalog system, which has had many years of many different people putting books in differently. So the catalog is essentially how we know what our collection is. And it's inaccurate in many ways, and so this will help make it accurate. And then lastly, while being at the desk, it'll be a consistent person who can have basic computer knowledge and knowledge of the library to help patrons answer reference questions, help them use the computer. These are things that myself in this new position will do as well, but it will enable us to be open more hours. And then also, of course, helping with that catalog system is a big part of that job. Thanks.
Thanks, Michelle. Paul or Travis, would you like to go next?
Can you hear me? This is Paul.
Yes, thanks, Paul. Go ahead.
So the DRC operator position, it's to kind of improve. I mean, I don't know how many people realize, but the assistant operators that are presently working there in the labor pool are all temporary. They have no benefits and no formal training outside of the training that I give them in the operation of the facility. But there's not like the SWAN of the Solid Waste Association of North America or the Rural Alaska Landfill Operator. There's no training like that because it seems to me you would have to train everybody in the pool as opposed to just training one individual. And so my hope with the operator position is part of a succession plan, you know, as far as someone to kind of slowly, you know, kind of build up their training and experience into the operation of the landfill so that they would receive training and that also they would receive benefits. And, you know, maybe some people don't think benefits are that important. I don't know, but I think they do say something as far as, you know, how you retain employees, as far as, you know, how you give them benefits and whatnot, and health insurance, retirement, things like that. And with the labor pool, there are no, you know, they only get Social Security and stuff like that. But with making them a regular position, it's to kind of say, hey, you know, we're taking this position seriously. They don't have to reapply every year like labor pool employees do. So it's, you know, to train someone up so that they can, you know, be the full operator, you know, working full time in the summer, working part time in the winter, having some assistance with myself and the assistant operator, you know, as far as having two employees a week or having someone who can cover for them in their absence. And then they would be trained as far as what's involved with being the manager. So they could, you know, in times of my absence, they could take care of the managerial duties that come with the DRC. Because I don't know, you know, how people realize, you know, I've been doing this for 27 years. And so it's kind of, you know, it seems to be functioning just fine. But there's a lot of big decisions that have to be made in terms of how the facility kind of manages, you know, its growth and stuff like that. So the DRC operator to me was kind of my attempt to give the city a plan so you can train someone up. I mean, I kind of see it when I retire. I don't think, you know, the city is going to go out and hire a landfill manager. I know that the Unalaska has been trying for 2 years to find a new landfill manager for their operation, and their benefits and pay is well above ours. You know, we're kind of one of those unique situations. My feeling is that you train someone local and kind of train them up into the position. That's kind of my hope. I mean, who knows? You know, it's someone could come from the outside to become the operator and then the manager. So it doesn't provide any new thing for the community per se in terms of operating hours and stuff like that, but it's to make the DRC operation more robust. That's kind of my goal in that. So that's all I got at this point.
Thank you, Paul.
Hello, Madam Mayor. This is Travis. So,
hi, Travis. Go for it.
Awesome. Thank you. So my position is called the EMS coordinator. As my role as the fire chief, but just like any other big city, there's lots of helmets or hats that are underneath that fire chief. And the EMS coordinator or EMS captain or whatever the title might be, this position in a fire department is probably the one that is relied on the most by the fire chief and is, in this case, will be a very beneficial asset to the volunteers in helping train, follow up on a lot of that training that goes on a weekly basis. But what it does on the work side of it is that they basically take over the whole EMS division from me. They'll work directly with the medical director, who is right now is Dr. Vaught. One day in the not too near future, that is going to have to change someday. And that's going to be a whole big change in our department and how our EMS system works. We have to work underneath that medical director's license. So we listen to how they operate, basically. But they'll be in charge of training, overseeing the rig, the ambulance, and checking it, making sure all the stuff is there after all of the calls. Like I said, training. The EMS world's moving to this hybrid world where you get all of your instruction over the internet, and then you have to have somebody in-house teach the skills portion of that and oversee the testing side of that. I'm learning how to do that right now with three people, and it's been pretty hard for me. And you can ask any of those three how much time I've had to actually help them. Every year we go over, we have protocols that we have to update and sit down with our medical director and talk about. This takes away this whole section of my job, of that part of my job, and allows me to focus a lot more also on the emergency manager side of what is in my job description, on helping write writing real community emergency response plans that are Gustavus specific, not like the skirt plan that we have now, and helping form a community emergency response team and working with the state. You guys have seen the connections that I've made and all of this stuff that we've been able to get from the state. This will just help benefit that more, helping like Mike had stated with the hazard mitigation plan and the benefits that that plan can offer our community, making sure that we're using those things. But that's a whole nother job that's in my description that I haven't been able to get to, but we're seeing over the last couple of years that it's probably a necessity that we probably get to that and utilize those systems more. So it's really me expanding more into my job description already, but I have to give up something somewhere to make that happen. This is also a spot that to me is not my strongest suit of my job. It is, I love EMS, I love being an EMT, but the instruction part of it is probably my hardest thing that I have to do. So any help that I can get from that is going to be beneficial for not only the volunteers, but the whole public in general, by having the best trained EMS people that we can possibly have. I'm not saying we don't already have those, because we have people that provide us good training, and we do the best that we can. So just having another person, it also provides another person up to a trained level, and hopefully bringing some experience in that will give me a rest and not have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It'll give me hopefully an opportunity to pass that radio or turn my radio off and dig in a garden or go pick strawberries or whatever that case might be, and not worry about having to go on a call and be there for everybody at every moment. So I'd love to pass some of that on as well. I think that's all I got to say for that right now, unless you guys have any more questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Travis. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I wanted to acknowledge Joe Clark's point. There certainly are, we know it's been a tough year in this community for many, many community members here. People's budgets have been stressed. Fortunately, we've had the staff in the city available to cut checks from federal money to help everybody out and help offset some of those financial stresses that we've had for both individuals and businesses. But one important thing about this is that our budget balances without any increase in our sales tax rate. So we're not looking at having to increase taxes that would increase that financial stress on families and businesses here. We're managing to continue to provide services and improve the quality of those services without any increase in the tax rate. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand, that people like me don't support the idea of having to increase sales tax rate. It's our job to provide the community with the services that the community has asked for and that the city has agreed to take on and to provide, and to do so with a balanced budget, with, you know, a fiscally responsible budget that covers those expenses without increasing taxes. So that's the job of the council, to make that those two pieces of our job, providing the services and keeping the fiscal side in order to support those services. That's our job in this spring event that we do every year to balance the budget. So I hope that provides a little perspective there.
Thank you, Mike. Go ahead, John. John, I see that you're unmuted, but we can't hear you. Okay, maybe we'll come back to John. Go ahead, Joe Van Der Zanden.
Yeah, I had a question for Paul. I was wondering if it would make sense just to maintain an assistant pool, I believe, like you have done in the past, and have the flexibility with the budget that if you come across this person, that once they've gotten their feet wet and express an interest in pursuing this, to be able to bump them into that operator, more of a full-time position. But it seems a little unrealistic that you can just find this person and put them into that slot, unless you already have one working there, to be able to just go for that. It seems like you'd have to do a trial thing for a little while anyway, and hope to find that person. Thank you.
Yeah, I can respond. I'll try what I can. It's also, is there any guarantee that the city would do that? I will work with what the city provides me. And if that's what the city is providing, then that is what I'll work with. That's all I got.
Okay, well, I will go ahead and speak, see if we can get John Buckeye back on. But I wanted to, first of all, thank the council and staff for going through this budget cycle. I feel like it's never easy, and I think especially so over Zoom, but we've had a lot of really good discussions so far, and lots of emails and variations. So I just wanted to thank everybody for putting in a lot of hard work, especially our treasurer and our city administrator. And I also wanted to thank our staff, the DRC, the library, and our fire chief for advocating for what you see a need for in your city departments. It's obviously the council's job to try to understand and balance what the public wants and what we see our services are in need of. And that's the hard part, but it starts with our departments advocating for what they need. So thank you for doing that. That's all I've got. Is there any other council comment before we open it up to members of the public? Councilmember Clark, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. All of these positions that we've heard about and discussed are very good, but the largest portion of our citizen tax dollars already go to our operations payroll. We're a small city, and we're currently experiencing a wildly fluctuating tax base, and we're also continuing to feel the negative effects of the COVID pandemic. I think we a wiser way to go would be to wait at least one more year to try to get a truly normal year under our belt. I do not see this as a good time to increase staff or payroll. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Any other council question or comment before we move on?
Okay, this is your city clerk, Karen Platt. We're going to open it up to comments from the public now. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to, looks like there's about 33 people online. And hopefully many of you have comments to share. So we're going to limit the comments to 4 minutes. I will be keeping track of time for you. According to our ordinance, you may not give up your own time to another person. So we'll just be sticking with 4 minutes, and I will give you a 10 second warning. If you'd like to make public comment at this time, please click the participants icon and then the hand icon to raise your hand. If you do not have that option, you can unmute your phone and I will add you to the list for comment, and I will remute you and then call on you when it's your turn to speak. We ask that you state your name before speaking. And we ask for that you refrain from speaking if your comments have already been addressed by another speaker. We ask that you be respectful in your comments and not to use profanity. If you are unable to comment through the Zoom platform, you may email me your comments at clerk@gustavus-ak.gov. And it looks like we've got a few people with their hands raised. And we'll start with Leah Oaken, and I'll let the mayor take over the hands after that.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, council members. My name is Leah Oaken, and I'm going to speak on behalf of the Gustavus Visitor Association. It's very easy to see what the library does and what the EMS system does and Travis does and what the DRC and Paul does. But I think it's difficult for the community to see what the Gustavus Visitor Association does. So I just want to draw attention to what we do with the finances and why it's so important to invest in the GVA. The GVA, so basically, what does the community get from the GVA? And what do we do? So what do is we market Gustavus. We market all of Gustavus as a destination. Every single business, everything that we have here, we put us on the map in the world. So we market Gustavus, and marketing is expensive. Every campaign, every ad is very costly, and it's competitive. So it's, you know, the bigger the ad, the more expensive it is. But if we want to be seen, we have to go big. We're a tiny destination. So in order to put us on the map, you know, we have to be big and be bold. So it's that marketing costs a lot of money. And so what does the community get? The community gets tourism dollars. So our economy is driven by visitors. So visitors bring money and leave the money here so that we can pay for all the things that we're talking about. You know, this whole budget meeting is about, you know, money and what are we going to do with the money that we have. And if we can generate more money, then we can have these positions. We can fix the roads. We can do things without putting our hand in our own pocket. We can utilize tourism dollars. So it's really important. Right now, we're talking about negative effects of COVID, but I'd like to point out the positive effects of COVID. COVID has put Alaska on the map. It's clean, it's wide open, it's on people's bucket list of a place to go. And when you take away the cruise ships, you then bring up the independent travelers. And that's what Gustavus is about. So independent travelers wanting to come to Alaska are going to see a small, clean, friendly, wonderful place like Gustavus and say, this is where I want to go to. But they won't say that unless we're marketed, unless we throw ourselves into people's carts. So this is the time that that we need to do the marketing. This is the time we need to take that money and reinvest it so that we have more money in the future. So the positive things are, COVID has shown that Alaska is the safest place for Americans to go to on a destination right now. So, you know, this is the place that people want to come to, and this is the time that we need to put that money in and let people know that we're out here. So I would urge that you've taken out, you know, 10,000 of our request budget, and I'm wondering of the possibility of taking a little bit of money out of the predicted COVID stipend that's coming up and making us whole and giving us that full amount. I'm wondering if that's a possibility. But if it's not, I just wanted to let the public know, who everybody who's listening, of what we do and the value and the importance of the Gustavus Visitor Association. Thank you. I'm open for questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Leah. Any council comments or questions for Leah regarding the GVA? Go ahead, Mike.
Leah, can you give us a quick rundown on how you see the visitors season coming? I know we're getting a nice boost on people using rooms with a construction crew. And if they all, if we get room tax from them for 30 nights each, up to our 30-day limit for that, and there are 50 of them, that's like 1,500 nights right there. That's sort of gravy on top of the rest of the visitor season. Is it looking like the bookings are good for lodges that won't be catering to the construction workers? How's it looking? Thanks.
Sure, thanks for that question, Mike. Things are looking good. Yes, so the construction workers, you've got the Intertie and the Seacon, who are coming in earlier season. So they're taking up bed space that's ordinarily is a slow time for a lot of the inns and bed and breakfasts. So they're providing an income that is not typically utilized by the visitors in the early season and in the late season. So we will definitely get that benefit of the 30 days that they're here. And I don't think we're really losing bed or accommodation space due to their presence. You know, people, we haven't turned people away. You know, we still have availability of guests to stay, and things are looking good. It's slow to start. You know, I think with vaccinations and people's comfort level of traveling, They were slow to make the bookings. So a lot of like the Anime Lodge, their lines and their emails over the last couple of weeks are now going crazy. So the bookings are really coming in. I know the Glacier Bay Sea Kayaks are doing well. All the fishing lodges are around about 80% capacity. So things are looking good as far as visitors coming, the tourist season. So, you know, I think we're going to have a good season up ahead of us. And so it's all good. Good things. Thank you.
Phoebe or Tom, are you able to address Leah's question about I think she's referring to the ARP money. We just don't know enough about the stipulations around that yet?
I can address that, Mayor. So the American Rescue Plan has multiple lines of eligibility. One of them is economic development, and there's a line item in there specifically targeted to tourism and outdoor recreation and travel. In addition to that, there's multiple lines within categories of small business and tourism related businesses specifically. However, the details for each one of those eligibilities has not been identified yet. So we have this pot of money that's going to run for 2 years. And we know that there are eligibility categories that are targeting certain industries like the tourism industry. So it indicates that we're going to see similarly like we did under CARES for small businesses, specific opportunities for the tourism industry. In addition to that, we also know that the state's going to be getting money specific to tourism, and that those funds could trickle down to the different communities that rely on tourism specifically. As you can imagine, without the cruise ship season, many of our coastal communities are going to be hit hard as a second year of no revenues coming from those opportunities. So I think we'll see some money coming through the state in addition to what the rescue plan line item eligibilities are. So hope to have more information at the end of this week through another presentation of analysis by the National League of Cities and the Alaska Municipal League. Hopefully by the end of next week, we'll actually have dollars for those line items. Of course, I'll put that information out as soon as I get it. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks a bunch, Tom. Joe Clark, go for it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to thank Leah for all of her hard work at the GVA. I think the GVA is key to getting Gustavus up and running again. I hope that her projections for this season are correct. I know that I spoke to a lodge owner yesterday who told me that he took an absolute 50% loss last year, and he really can't afford to take that loss again. I especially like the idea of the Outside Magazine article. I know I was an avid reader of Outside for a long, long time, and that does have a tremendous coverage. But thank you, Leah. That's the main point. Bye.
Thanks, Joe. Any other council questions or comments for Leah? Leah, did you have something else?
I just wanted to say thanks, Joe.
All right. Okay, so if that's it for the GVA, I think Melanie Lesh is next. Whenever you're ready, Melanie.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I just one more shout out to the GVA, which is a productive, dynamic organization. The business community of Gustavus really benefits from the marketing that they organize. It's like a mini small business association. And thank you to the council, particularly Joe Clark, who hit the nail on the head. I think that there is a strong and not silent majority of Gustavus residents, especially those who signed the petition to request a city ballot initiative to hold the line on payroll expenses, which we submitted pre-COVID. So we do not support increasing city employees' salaries and benefits for the upcoming budget year. That is not to say that our city employees don't deserve consideration of justifiable salary adjustments, just not right now. I completely support the written comments that you've received from both Shelley Owens and those of Susan Warner. Susan submitted alternative budget scenarios in her written comments, and I want to highlight my choice of her full stop proposal, scenario 3.5. I want the council to back away from the two proposals that you've put forward and go back a step or two and carefully consider a budget balanced on a conservative estimate of our revenues, and not depend on one-time emergency federal funds to balance spending, especially payroll. We have not seen any economic signs of recovery, despite the very optimistic predictions that our revenues will not support increasing our budget in any category of city service. If our revenues don't support the services we expect, in this case, we may receive less of those services. That's fine. I do not want to see discussion of new revenue sources that may include property taxes. I would ask you to start out at a base of FY21's budget, adding only consumer cost increases and changes to salaries. And in the case of the fire chief, who does need EMS help and a vacation, and COVID-related assistance, in that case, yes, please plan on expending the emergency federal funding to offset that payroll expense. And I just want to conclude and say thank you all. And if you have any questions, I'm available.
Thank you. Council, questions or comments? For Mel? I have a question for you. This is Brittany. You mentioned not being interested in increasing revenue through a tax increase, specifically with property tax, but I'm wondering what your feelings were when we were speaking about a seasonal fuel tax last year.
What percentage increase is the, isn't that a state proposal? I'm not sure if I'm on mute still, but I know that there's a proposed increase in the state fuel tax, and I support that. I'm not sure. I don't really see a fuel tax in your budget. Maybe can you explain that further?
Sure.
I can speak to that, Madam Mayor. Last spring, I pulled up here Ordinance FY20-14, which was some changes to Title IV. And the council had introduced a seasonal fuel excise tax with the thought of trying to generate some funds to help offset our lack of national forest receipts to fund the roads. You can't earmark a tax for a specific item, but that was kind of the idea behind it. And this was introduced and then was up for public hearing right when the pandemic was really starting to become a reality. And so the council withdrew this section of it. So it has not been adopted or anything like that, but it was drafted and discussed last spring. So that's what Madam Mayor is referring to.
Thanks, Phoebe. You know, that's up to you guys to propose separately from this discussion on the budget. My main concern is holding the line on payroll. And for just this year, I know that there is a lot of help out there from federal sources, but those are one time. Hopefully we'll get a handle on COVID, and maybe in another year, things will return to normal. But for now, I just don't want to see this padded budget that you put forward. And you know, other taxes are just not part of this conversation right now. But I just wanted to say, it looks like, you know, when we build up a budget that's not sustainable, then we run the risk of looking for other revenue. And the big one, you know, is property tax. So definitely stay away from property tax. The fuel tax, I support at a statewide level, but it's not part of this conversation. But thank you for answering my question.
Any other council questions or discussions for Mel? Okay, thank you again for your comments. Artemis, you are up next.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, this is a great town hall meeting, and I'm very glad to be able to have the conversation get started that we need to have about budgets. It's always a tricky one. I want to say that I am not necessarily a terribly conservative person on taxes. I believe that we should be paying for the things we want. But at the same time, we're in a situation where we only have projections for this year, and we don't know how things are going to go. We don't know if people are going to be actively traveling. I have a lot of people in my extended world that travel and don't travel, and through because of not being able to visit and just needing to reach out, I've been rotating through my address book all year. And so now I'm saying, so, you know, how are you doing? Are you vaccinated? What's your next plan? And there seems to be kind of two camps. One is, boy, as soon as that 14 days after that second shot, I booked a flight to Hawaii. So that's a certain number of people, or the Bahamas. Some of them are going, you know, but then there's another group of people that are going, I don't know if I can ever take this mask off. I don't know. It's just still so frightening. And I don't know. I have to, you know, really take this slowly. And so I think that a lot of the world is kind of like that. I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to see this as an opportunity, and they're going to travel and come. But I think a lot of people might not. We also don't know if there's going to be a resurgence when things really start to open up, or if the variants of the COVID are going to rear their ugly heads and impact us. So I'm on the for this year, a very conservative track. I think we should be keeping things low key as best we can and making sure that we have the money to do the things we want to do. It's difficult with the city positions, the new city positions, because I see all those things as being valuable, but I also see what happens when we commit ourselves to more employees. I was glad to hear that the library position was a 6-month situation, because that was one I was going to mention the idea of doing a contract on. I had talked to Michelle about the program that she had going with the recataloging, which is finite. So I really like the idea that we might be able to get something done without taking on another full-time city employee. And I know it's difficult not to take on city employees when we see a job that needs to be done, but I do agree with the people who have spoken that this is not necessarily the year to be doing new things. I also, I know we always raise up property taxes, and I'm sure property taxes would be difficult. I'm on a fixed income, they'd probably be difficult for me. But I did look into it a little bit. You know, we came in as a city with a 2% sales tax in 2004. 7 years later, we raised it to 3%. It's been 11 years since that raise. So we might want to be taking a look at if our expenses have raised, we need to perhaps be thinking about generating a little bit more money, not necessarily from visitors, but from the people who live here and use the services. And I know that will be tricky when the time comes, but it's just also responsible. We can't expect to have services without paying for them. And even the people that would say, well, I can do without this or I can do without that, in general, we're not going to do without roads. We're not going to do without a fire hall. We're not going to do without EMS. And the people that say they can, usually to me, that means they haven't had to yet. They haven't had to make that call. And you want someone on the other end of that phone. But I do think it's time to be more conservative than not right now, while we see how our economy in our city, in our state, in our country, how it really acts as we open up from the pandemic. Thank you.
Thank you, Artemis. Are there any council members that have questions or comments for Artemis? Okay, thank you again. Sally, you are up next.
Thank you, Brittany. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, thank you to all the council for all of the work that goes into this. I know it's a huge amount of work. And thank you especially to Phoebe for going through it line by line. That was very helpful in understanding the whole budget. At this time, I don't really feel like I can support extra, adding extra positions to the city's payroll. I do see the value in most of those, in all of those positions. And I really appreciate Paul and Travis and Michelle for, you know, explaining what those positions would be doing. That's very helpful also. But at this time, just for all of the same reasons that other people have said, I just don't think this is the right time. But I did have a question about the DRC position. And I just wondered what the plan is for, you know, if this does go into effect, what the plan is for phasing Paul out and phasing a new person in, and how do we avoid, or is the plan for this to become just one position again at the time that Paul retires? And I know there's no guarantees that things, you know, won't happen, but how do we avoid making that a permanent two-person position at the time of retirement? Thank you.
Can I speak to that?
Please, yes.
I think it's quite unlikely that the community, the city would be able to hire a landfill manager because of the uniqueness of the position. I mean, and I tried to explain that when I made my pitch earlier, that with the budget we have and the small community we have, I see this as a position that's kind of trained up from the community as opposed to finding someone from outside. Like I mentioned, Unalaska has been looking for a landfill manager for 2 years. And, you know, I kind of watch the field as far as how positions are filled and whatnot. And I just, no, I kind of, my vision for it, and yeah, I have no idea how this would pan out. And, you know, it's kind of like no one knows the future. This is just kind of a best effort. That the person who would succeed me would basically be like I am now. They would be the manager operator, and they would have, you know, I think it would be in the city's best interest in the long term to have two regular positions at the DRC, just because benefits and employee retention is something to think about. And I think a lot is taken for granted. But I think, yeah, it's just a transitional thing. There would actually be a landfill manager and an operator. I don't see that as something that would become permanent. But, you know, we can't see the future. And I hope that answers your question.
Sally, did you have a response for Paul? I see your hands up again.
Yes, thanks. I understand what Paul's saying, but and that's the way I understood the plan to be, is that they would hire somebody from within the community and train that person up and working with Paul, but I still don't understand how that transition is going to happen. I mean, Paul's saying, I guess he answered my question, but it's still is a little confusing to me how it would become just one position, but maybe it would be two positions. I just want to make sure that I understand that we're adding another permanent position to the payroll. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments for Sally's comment from the council? Okay, thank you very much, Sally. Whitney, you are up next.
Hi guys, thank you everyone. I really appreciate everyone's efforts. Going first into salaries, I think the DRC did a smart idea by trying to do succession planning, and I recognize that Paul's hours would be decreasing and not both of the positions are full-time positions. And I see that it's only a net increase of $9,000. So I think that's a really prudent succession planning occurring there. For the fire and EMS, it would be really nice to know if partial FTEs could be a feasible alternative. I don't doubt that two positions could do more, but do we really need that? I definitely think that Travis could use a break, but what other strategies might be employable? With the vacancy at the library, that restructuring seems reasonable. But I think definitely our big issue is income for the community. I don't see any grant funding at least listed here. So I don't know what our success rate or number of grants that we're putting in for, but I think that's a real carrot potentially for bonuses. If we bring in grant money, offering staff some type of bonus to reward that type of income source. I'd really like to look at bed taxes. We're at 4% and other communities are anywhere from 4 to 12%. I would suggest either doubling it or even higher, because that is the lion's share of our income and our economy. And that would bring us commensurate with our neighboring communities. Several communities have a car rental tax. I have absolutely no idea if the cost benefit of analysis would work, but they're usually between 6% and 8%. I'm not opposed to the seasonal fuel tax. I think a property tax, the appraisals are just incredibly expensive. So I don't even see that being a feasible option. But generally I think we need to increase our income in order to have any level of more expenses. Right now, a projected income of $17,000 profit with the $99,000 of rescue plan leaves us $82,000 in the hole to recover by FY23. So I think we really need to bring that better into alignment. And nothing in this plan really moves the community forward except for maybe roads and tourism. So we're not addressing public water, PFAS, improvements to infrastructure. You know, status quo is okay, but it doesn't move the bar. So I just would like us to look forward and try to figure out where we're going and what we really do want and figuring out how to make that income happen. Thanks.
Thanks, Whitney. There's a lot of goodness in there. I was trying to write as fast as you were speaking, so I might email you again. Did you, you quickly went through all of the departments, but did you want any specific questions answered? Maybe Travis can touch on the FTE for the EMS coordinator position.
I would say that's my only question, yeah.
Yeah, so thank you, Whitney, for the question. So it was discussed earlier about having this at a like a part-time position. And I just don't think it's a thing that can be warranted. What I'm asking for somebody to be in this is as a minimum of an EMT 2 level, which has got a little bit of training behind it. And bringing some experience to Gus Davis so that when there is a call that they're bringing, that they have some of that knowledge already from seeing some stuff in the past as well. So to get somebody what I think our community would need and would be, and how we would benefit from that, I think it's got to be a full-time position. So I've thought about it. It just entails the work that's actually entailed in it is a full-time position on its own. Like I said in my earlier pitch that most departments, this is like the biggest position with inside the department, I would say. Also expanding my position into the emergency management world makes me open to looking at a lot more grant funding for options that are coming in. It's just not in my realm of area. To really do, because I have to focus on too many other little tiny tasks that eat up all of my time to look for those big ones as well. I thought I had something else I wanted to say, but I guess I lost it, so I'm good. Unless you have any more, want more details on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Travis. Any council questions or comments and discussion for any of Whitney's comments that she covered?
This is Phoebe. I just wanted to make a quick comment for some of the infrastructure things that Whitney mentioned that we are, that's kind of in a separate process on the capital improvement plan that the council has been working on. And I think it's gonna be at the next work session next Monday again. And that's where those more tangible capital projects are funded. They're not funded through this operating budget. They're funded through savings and grants and things like that through a separate process. So you won't see those projects necessarily here in the operating budget, but look for them in the capital improvement plan.
Thank you, Phoebe. Jen, you are up next whenever you're ready.
Good. Hello, this is Larry, actually. Jen may request a follow-up if I do a piss poor job. Basically, first off, I would like to thank everybody putting this out there for us all to digest and take shots at. I think, you know, getting it out there and getting discussion going is great. And so I thank you all for being there and for doing this. I'm in the camp of the people kind of supporting what Joe Clark was saying. And I'm not going to repeat what they said, other than to say that, I mean, I don't have any gripes with any of the positions that are proposed. I think they all have some serious merit, but I think the bottom line for me is the petition that happened, what was it, 2 summers ago? And a lot of people in this community spoke very strongly and very clearly about not wanting budget growth, wanting to put a cap on, and for exactly the kind of things that we're seeing in this budget, the fear of kind of creeping government growing and saddling us in the future, or maybe just because they don't want to see government growing. And I think it was a variety of reasons people did it, but as someone has explained to me, I think the survey the city did a couple of years ago, before that, had a similar response. And so I think a lot of people in this community don't want to see these kinds of things. And I think it's important for the council to take steps that reflect those public concerns. And I think some of it's due to the fact that we live in tumultuous times, and there's a lot of uncertainty about where things are going to go forward. But I think prudence and caution should be the order of the day. That's it.
Thank you, Larry. Any council questions or comments for Larry's comments? Okay, thank you again. Okay, Susan, you are up next whenever you're ready. Thanks.
I'm waiting for my mic to turn on. There we go. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would just like to thank the council for your efforts to navigate through the rapids here to come up with the annual budget process. You should have received from me 7 pages of comment consisting of 4 documents, a proposal, 2 example payroll sheets, and a narrative explanation of the second payroll sheet. It's one thing for your community to tell you that they want our leaders to take a more conservative approach to the city's finances, but it's a whole nother thing to figure out how to actually accomplish that. So I took a pass at offering up 2 scenarios to take a more conservative approach to the budget. Scenario 3.5, that would be a full stop kind of proposal with no raise, no new positions, and a scenario 4 that would try to incorporate a raise for the administrator and 2 of the 3 new positions that were requested by the staff. A quick overview of those would be a scenario 3.5 proposal would link the payroll to no more than this year. Scenario 4 would link the payroll to no more than what was budgeted for FY20, our best business year ever. Neither one of these proposals would address spending $100,000 a year more in payroll than we take in local taxes and fees. But what it would do is give the council a transition year, a shoulder season to try to figure out how can we recover from the negative financial impacts of COVID-19 and sort out how are we going to get a better balance between our local tax and fee income and what we're expending, particularly on payroll. Both proposals ask the council to consider investing in their community's future and take 100% of any rollover monies and put it into the roads account rather than expanding city expenses like payroll. The scenario 3.5 would fund GVA at $30,000 with $15,000 from the COVID relief funding. And scenario 4 would ask the council to invest in the community's future by giving GVA the entire $40,000 that they asked for to implement their marketing plan. Both proposals would ask the council to spend up to $55,000 to offset the cost of the fire chief's position. So please read the 7 pages. You either got it in 4 separate documents or in 1 PDF. If you didn't get all 7 pages, send me an email. I'd be happy to send it to you again. And thank you so much for your work. I know how much work it is. So good luck to you. And let's see if we can figure out a way to move forward together. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Any council comments or questions for Susan? I know we just received her email this morning. I know I personally haven't had a chance to look over it, but I will work on that this week. So thank you, Susan, for sending that. Any council comments for Susan? Okay, thank you again. I don't see any other hands raised from the public. Are there any other members of the public that wish to give comment during this town hall for the budget? Okay, not seeing any. If folks have comments or questions later that you just maybe aren't thinking of right now or for whatever reason, please send your questions and comments to the clerk and she will distribute them through the council. I also have my mayor's hours on Wednesdays and you can certainly give me a shout on my cell number if you have questions. Thank you so much to all the members of the public who have spoken up during this. It's really helpful for the council to hear from all members of the public, and I am very grateful for all of you who spoke up and have emailed. Joe Clark, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Previous Zoom, not all of them, but the first Zoom calls that we were doing, there was a chat function where members of the public could talk back and forth and leave comments. Do we still have that available for our Zoom meetings? So we get a feeling of, you know, what all of our participants are thinking, and not just a few.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that question. We did get an email from a member of the public asking that question earlier, and with some consideration, we decided to not use that function because it, one, can be distracting to the council members who are trying to listen to the comments and read comments that often come very quickly. And it's hard to also keep track later in the records when we're trying to go back and figure out exactly what people were talking about. So that's why we prefer for folks to email their questions and comments. It's just a little cleaner that way. Thank you for asking that.
And thank you for the answer.
Madam Treasurer, did you have anything else for the evening?
No, thank you. I really appreciate everybody taking the time to go through this with us and provide feedback. And again, please feel free to contact me with any questions anytime about any of this. I am happy to go over it. Thank you.
Thanks, Phoebe. I guess maybe the next step here is to decide whether we want to discuss these comments and questions at a budget work session or potentially discuss them at the April 5th work session. Do you have any thoughts on that, Phoebe?
I have kind of two thoughts on that. We have a lot of items coming up for the April work session, but a lot of them I think should be pretty quick. So one thing that we could do is just talk about it at the work session next week. And if we feel like it's unfinished, either don't introduce it at the April meeting or schedule another work session. Well, either way, probably it wouldn't get introduced at the April meeting, but schedule another work session at that time if we feel like there's more work to do still. But there are kind of a lot of items that are going to be on the docket for Monday night, including the capital improvement plan, which also might need its own work session or not.
Shelley, did you have a public comment for the budget?
I did. Thank you, Mayor. I'm sorry, I lost my feed following the question from Joe Clark, but I'm wondering if, since I didn't hear the response, I support the chat function during town meetings, but also would like to request that public written comment be posted on the city's website, if possible, so the community can see the discussion.
Thank you, Shelley. The clerk will look into that. And just to reiterate what I said about the chat, We did discuss using that function. I discussed it with staff earlier today and we decided against it because it's a little bit hard to keep track of the comments later when you're going back through and reading them. They come in quite quickly, as I'm sure you remember, and it's just a little bit cleaner to have folks email their comments and questions. Just a little bit of a cleaner way to do that. So thanks for asking. Back to the topic of when to discuss this next, I would be in favor of not squishing it down with the April 5th work session, just because Phoebe brought up the really good point that it's, we've already got a lot on our plate, and this is not something I want to rush through. So I would be in favor of scheduling another separate work session just to discuss the comments and discussion points from this budget town hall. Are there any council objections to scheduling a separate work session for the budget? Do any of the staff members, I feel like we used to do some meetings on Thursdays or maybe Wednesdays when we needed to kind of double down and get a little extra work done. Am I remembering that correctly? Okay, how about, let's see, I think April 8th, which is a Thursday. Are there any conflicting things with that? Got a thumbs up from Phoebe. Okay, 5:30, April 8th, going once, going twice. Okay, mark it on your calendars, please. Okay, Susan, I see that you've got your hand up again. Go for it.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just, before we leave the subject of turning on chat in Zoom meetings that are designed to solicit public input, I just wanted to remind the council of the promise made to the community, the promise of intent with resolution CY19-17, where the council said that they would seek to increase active participation of Gustavus voters in decisions affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement by encouraging in-person testimony at formal hearings and during public comment periods. And just add that the Juneau City Assembly turns on the chat function and simply tells citizens that what they say in chat would not become part of the official formal record, but they would be welcome to talk with each other in that. And assembly members, if the chat can be turned into a file that people can download and look at later. So there really is not that great onus of moderation that would need to happen to allow people to have that channel to speak up. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Okay, any last comments or thoughts from the council before we adjourn? Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone very much for speaking out tonight and sharing your thoughts with us, as well as people who have written letters in the last week. Really, really appreciate it. And I also want to really thank all the city staff for all your input, and Phoebe for providing these budgets to look at. And thank you all very much. And hopefully we can pull together a budget that at least most of us are okay with. You're not going to be able to make everyone happy, but at least something that will get us through the next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. Go ahead, Joe.
I just wanted to make one last comment. There's been a lot of people speaking tonight about holding the line on the budget, and it seems like the lion's share of the budget increase is all aimed at that EMS position. Someone mentioned a few minutes ago that our last sales tax increase was 11 years ago. We went from 2% to 3%, and I've been told that the majority of that was for the purpose of hiring a fire chief. And the question of hiring another full-time EMS position at $65,000 plus, and that's going to go up every year, seems like too much for the council just to say, okay, let's do that. It seems to me like that last increase to sales tax was a ballot issue. And it should be again to make that big of a leap. And it should just end up being the community's decision this fall. Thank you.
Thank you, Drew. Okay, anything else from council? Okay, again, my sincerest thanks to everybody who participated this evening. Thank you to staff for putting together some comprehensive budgets for us to look at, and I hope to continue to hear from all of you. Have a great night.